Dream Show. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson, and this is episode 191. Now, we've got three different things happening in the show today, and the middle part is a dream that was sent in by email by Rachel for interpretation. Now, over the years, we've mostly had guests on live by phone or by Skype, and I talk to them and hear their dream for the first time and interpret the dream as we go and see how it relates to their life. Sometimes on the show, we go for no guest and we present different material, just to sort of ring the changes. And occasionally in the past, we've had a guest by email, which is what Rachel is. Now, this is where the guest submits the dream by email, obviously, and then I look at it, and then I email the person and ask them various questions about the dream and about their life. And so we have this conversation, but rather than you listen to the conversation takes place by email. And then finally, I put an interpretation together, send it to the guest, and then read out this on air. Now, it's quite a long and complex process doing it this way, so we've decided that this is the last time that we'll do an email type of guest. So this will be the last one of those. Now, Rachel's dream is actually relates, as you'll discover, to something quite traumatic and difficult in her early childhood. And because of that, I'm keeping a lot of the dream details in. So it is quite a long dream. And you'll see why I keep the details in, because they point the way to really working quite deeply with this trauma. She didn't realize when she submitted the dream that it related to that. But during the ongoing discussion, as you'll hear, it became extremely clear that that was what it was about. And it's given Rachel an absolutely wonderful opportunity to do further healing on that and be able to move forward in her life. So that's the middle section of the show. The last section, we do our first dream snap. Now, I've been talking about dream snaps for a couple of episodes and working towards them. And a dream snap is where you, instead of an email guest, you send in you, yes, you, who it is listening, or anybody else that's listening, can send in a dream through my website, and I'll give you the details as to how to do that later. But instead of us having a long, involved conversation over email, I simply look at the dream and do a very quick overview of the dream. So it's nothing in depth. It's not based on any discussion with the dreamer. And you'll see you'll hear an example of that at the very end of the show. And that will give you an idea whether you'd like to maybe contribute a dream or two of your own for the Dream Snap segment. Now, to balance all of this, I'm actually going to start by reading out a very short blog that I wrote last week for the Dream Academy website, because it's is a good preamble, I feel, before going into Rachel's dream, which, as I said, goes into some quite deep traumatic stuff. It's a good preamble because it highlights that not all dreams lead us into the darkness of our past. Even though we go into the darkness of our past in order to heal and become lighter, many of our dreams are also there for great inspirational stuff straight off the bat without having to go back into the past. So I thought that was a nice balance. But before we do any of these, first the websites. If you haven't been to my website recently, they're always updating and changing. Go to janeteresa.com. That's Teresa without an H. You'll find links from there, very easy to find, to the Dream Academy, or find me on Facebook or Instagram. So starting with the blog that I wrote for the Dream Academy website last week, it's called Past, Present and Future. And you can also, of course, read this at the Dream Academy by accessing it through janeteresa.com. Past, present and future. Why dig up the past? Isn't that what you do when you explore your unconscious mind through your dreams? It's a common perception that the unconscious mind is a minefield of explosive, repressed emotions and bad memories buried in a vault of trash and long-discarded mental clutter. To some extent it is, but it's also a treasure trove, a gold mine. While you may think of your unconscious mind as a dark reservoir of things past and best forgotten, it constantly asserts its presence in your daily life, and is also a potent avenue that can connect you with a greater sense of meaningful being in your future. Think of your unconscious mind as containing everything you don't know or have forgotten about yourself and your life, past, present, and future. By definition, it contains what you are not consciously aware of, even though it directs a great proportion of your automatic daily reactions and responses to life. Surely it's worth getting to know and befriending this powerful energy. I once dreamed that I saw a rat emerging from the ground. At first I was a little scared, but as I watched I saw that it wasn't a rat, it was a small dog. As I watched the small dog grow bigger, I saw that it wasn't a dog, it was a small horse. As I watched the small horse grow bigger, I saw that it was a two-headed animal, a horse dog, with a horse head and, at a slight angle, a dog head. I felt sad for the horse dog because it didn't know which way to turn, which head to follow. When I worked with my dream, I realized that I saw dogs as unquestionably loyal and horses as vibrantly passionate. At the time of my dream, this made sense of some confusion I had been feeling about the direction to take a project. I was torn between my loyalty to systems that had worked for me in the past, but that then seemed to have lost momentum, and my passion to give vibrancy and life to the project by embracing new systems. I had been conscious of confusion over direction, but not conscious of the underlying dynamics. My dream revealed what my unconscious mind knew, that I was torn between two directions for fear of being a rat, disloyal to what had served me well in the past, but which was no longer serving me. Rather than dig up a scary rat from my unconscious mind, I had dug up a gift in the form of insight into my reasonable confusion and a choice. I applied dream alchemy to align the two heads into one, so that I could look ahead with the best of both worlds, making decisions that were loyal to the life and vibrancy of the project and the good things that would grow from that. With the two heads combined and focused in the same direction, I and the project found the required momentum. Interpreting your dreams and working with them through dream alchemy may mean discovering the scary stuff, the rats or dark shadows that lead you to light, or it may mean mining gold directly. Many dreams show you talents you've buried, latent gifts you've yet to discover, life lessons you've failed to recognize, lost puzzle pieces you've been struggling, searching for, new ways of seeing the world, depths of wisdom and intuition you've overlooked, a sense of meaningful purpose awaiting your connection, and a whole host of other treasures that might sleep on unless you're ready to bring them into consciousness by awakening to your dreams. So now we go to Rachel's dreams and the dark places it took her in order to help her awaken. So first of all, I'm going to read out Rachel's dream as she sent it to me. I was in a rather dark living room of a house. I was in only a fairly long dress shirt. I walked into the light kitchen where my husband and a former colleague were, and I wondered if I wanted to leave my husband for this colleague. As I came into the open-plan kitchen, I hugged the colleague, and my decision to continue with him was quickly and easily made. I knew the colleague owned a black Porsche from 1969, even though we didn't talk about it. My husband was very hurt that I left him. I was then in a gigantic hotel and things got a little chaotic. I had to pee and went to where I expected the restroom to be. A waiter rolled a device with four toilets in a row. They were white with black seats. The device reminds me of a clothing rack used at fashion houses. I thought I could use one of these toilets, then realised there was no privacy. Another woman said aloud that she might pee in one of them. Another woman, arrogant, said something like, "You can't, because four of us have each peed in one of them," and I believe they had not been flushed. I jumped in and attacked the arrogant woman, saying, "Are you saying a toilet has to be replaced each time you use it? That's ridiculous." That shut her up, which pleased me because I was angry at how she had treated this other woman. I was now in the dining or breakfast hall of the hotel. There were no people. I saw a long, small, black, shiny spider on a table. It was a jumping spider, as I could see from the way it moved. I stood close by. At one point, it appeared to want to jump at me, attack me, jump at my face. I startled and said strictly, "Oh, no, you don't," and it didn't. I was now on the other side of the tables. Before, the tables were organised as in a dining room, kind of scattered around, and they were now in a circle or square, which made it look like a conference room. The spider was on a white plastic bag that lay on the table next to me. There was an inexplicable reference to a meadow with wild flowers. Were there maybe wild, dried flowers in the bag? It didn't seem very full. I led the spider without touching it, so it could walk into the bag, which I felt was what it wanted. But now the tip of the bag leaned over the edge of the tabletop. What if the bag fell with a spider in it? I was a little anxious. Then in a split second I decided it was not my responsibility and I let it go. My husband was very hurt that I had left him. I don't know if I thought about it beforehand, but I was convinced that once spurned he would never take me back. And I was sorry because I wanted him back. I let him know, and we did get back together swiftly and smoothly. I felt I should let my colleague know before we really continued. It felt like the decent thing to do, so I went to where I expected him to be and ran into two of his relatives, who each said they could not find him either. They too were looking for him. I felt alarmed. Something was obviously wrong. We continued our search. I walked through the hallway of the hotel, long and relatively small, like the hallway in my grandparents' house. And as I walked towards the entrance, I saw him walking towards me. He held his forearms extended. They were wounded. He could not use them. One hand missed the half of two fingers, and there was blood, though not that much, and everything was swollen. He said something like, "Now look what I've done." I assumed he'd been in an accident. Only later did I learn he had been attacked by a gang. Maybe because he was in their neighbourhood. He himself didn't seem impressed much by the injuries. I, however, was shocked. I decided to get him to the hospital. We would take my colleague's car. My husband, my colleague and I were now out in the street, passing by a row of parallel parked cars on the right side of the road, and as we came closer, I wondered if his car was a dark red Saab I saw, but it was a smarty green De Chevaux. The Citroën was positioned behind the Saab. It didn't surprise me the car wasn't the Porsche. I don't think that was still in my memory, and also I knew my colleague had a few different cars as a hobby. While we walked and the men talked, I worried. I would probably need to ask them for directions at every turn I'd make. The hospital was only a few blocks away, but I wasn't at all secure about the route. Also, this car had tremendous suspension, almost like an amusement park ride. Wouldn't that distract me from traffic? Also, once at the hospital, I'd have to pay for parking up front when I wanted to go with the two men to first aid right away. As we came closer to the car and it became obvious that I had decided to drive as I was walking to the driver's seat door, my husband said, "Are you serious? You want to drive when you're not used to this kind of suspension at all?" I felt he thought it not wise given the situation needed swiftness and accuracy. Because I had created those troubles in my mind, I felt relieved that he would drive. I was also disappointed. I would have loved to drive this quirky, funny car. And when I woke up, I really needed to pee. So it was a very long dream. But as I said, I felt, and you'll realise as we go through this, that I needed to really read out all the details because they're all relevant, even though we're not going to go into all of them. Now, Rachel sent some notes with the dream in her email, and I've picked out these three to read to you because they come in helpful when we do the interpretation. She said, elements of this dream colleague refer to another former colleague back in 1997 and 1998. He had a black Porsche from 1969. He also missed half a finger. He was looking for a fling with me. I was single. He had a girlfriend of 10 years and a newborn baby girl. Her second thing that she mentioned was, I dreamt about fear of my forearm getting hurt the night before last. I was in an impressive forest in the middle of the night by a small but vivid river, and a large white bird, not a bird of prey, I don't even believe it was a night bird, flew around me. I was a little worried it might hurt my forearm when or if it landed on it, because it had sharp nails and I had no protection. And the third note that she sent, which you'll discover is relevant, was she said, I talked to my sister on the phone last night right before I went to bed. I said, in regard of our childhood, I have finally realised what keeps stopping me in my tracks is not all the situations I perceive as indigestible, but my view of them. Now, this is something I have realised for quite a while now without being able to let go of my resentment and anger. So the next thing I did was I emailed Rachel a lot of questions, questions about aspects of a dream to try to work out what her associations to those parts of the dreams were. Even though I had a pretty solid overview of the meaning of the dream, I wanted to get in tighter and closer to some of the symbols. Now, I'm not going to read out all the questions that I sent her, and I'm not going to read out all her answers. I'm just going to read out a few that become relevant to the interpretation. So the first question I asked her was about the long dress shirt, which you'll remember at the beginning of the dream, she walked into the kitchen and she noticed that she was only wearing a long dress shirt. I asked her what she felt about a long dress shirt. And she said, well, it's practical, it's to the point, and it's hands-on. It's like, let's not muck about kind of attitude. But she said, I don't know if it's important, but I keep thinking about how my sister always wore my father's old dress shirts as a nightgown when she was about 16 or 17. I also think of this because in the dream, I was very slim, as she is in real life. Now, you'll get that sometimes when you contemplate a symbol in a dream, some part of you will go, oh, I don't know why I'm thinking this, but, and that is always very relevant, as you'll discover when we go into the interpretation of the dream, the reference to the sister in the nightgown and being 16 to 17 is very important. I also asked her, you know, she mentioned that rack of the four black and white toilets coming out on a kind of rack, and she said it reminded her of a fashion, the kind of clothing rack used in fashion houses. So I asked her, well, what does a clothing rack used in fashion houses mean to you? And she said it means like living out of a suitcase, not homely, not cozy. I asked her what white toilets with black seats meant to her or what she associated them with. And she said elementary school, old fashioned, it seems cheap, and I haven't seen one of those in a long time. Now, that spider took up a lot of the dream, and often when you have an animal in a dream, it can represent an instinct or an emotion that you haven't really, isn't really in your consciousness, that you haven't really got words to put around, just like the animals that I mentioned in my dream in the article before this. So it's really important to home into animals and try to find out what kind of energy do they represent for you. So I said to her, what's the personality of a jumping spider? And she said, she gave a couple of answers. One was, she said, distrustful, hostile, insecure, but I somehow wanted to protect it in the dream. And she also said it's nervous, jumpy, walking one step, then changing direction again and again, insecure and stuck. There was also quite an intensity I felt when she was talking, when she wrote about the dream, about the meadow with the wild flowers. Remember, this was the bit where she said there was a kind of unseen feeling about a meadow with wild flowers, and she wondered whether there were wild flowers in the plastic bag which was associated with the spider. So I said to her, when were you last in a meadow with wild flowers? And she said, on holiday in France in the mountains during the summer, I always felt free and happy. Now, I also asked her in that email question, so, you know, I didn't know what her answer to the previous question was, so there seems to be a bit of overlap, but it's important to read them both out. I asked her, how do you feel or would you feel in a meadow with wild flowers? And she said, free. Actually, there are tears in my eyes thinking about it now. Joyful. Blessed. And the last question I asked her, which was, I said, you mentioned the hallway was like the hallway of your grandparents' house. What do you feel about or associate with the hallway of your grandparents' house? Now, I'm about to read out her answer, which is long and which is obviously the traumatic part of the feedback on this dream and what the dream was addressing. So just a little warning that there's going to be some tough stuff here. But before I go there, just wanting to mention that even though we're going to read out some tough stuff, it was interesting that it didn't occur to Rachel when she referenced the hallway of the grandparents' hallway in house in the dream that it was related to this. So it's how blind we can be to symbols. And remember, in her dream, she was in the hallway of a hotel, and there was just this feeling that, oh, this reminds me of the hallway in my grandparents' house. So it's asking that, just that simple question, what do you feel about or associate with the hallway of your grandparents' house that brought out this? Rachel said, the hallway literally divided the part of the house where my grandparents' separate bedrooms were and the guest room where we, the grandchildren, slept. At the end of it, opposite the front door, was a toilet with a creepy, crumbling floor. Building-wise, I have no idea what was going on, but in one corner the floor sort of gave way. Kind of scary, really. Though you didn't have to stand there to use the toilet. Maybe this was a black and white toilet. I can't remember. I wouldn't be surprised. My grandfather was a paedophile, and my grandmother enabled him, quite actively, although meanwhile pretending to be very much against it. To me, it feels she wanted to be better than him. After all, she didn't do stuff like that. But she did. She tried to French kiss her own son when he was 17. The whole atmosphere of that side of my family, grandparents, mother, one of her brothers, was very oppressive. Don't show emotions, or rather, don't have them. Just ignore everything that may be hurtful. It's a taboo to talk about it, and pointless, it would be ignored. Basically, you would feel bad even to try and bring stuff up. And it doesn't just concern the paedophilia. My mother's older brother committed an awful act when I was 16. The whole family on both sides was upside down. Even though it was terrible for me, too, I also felt relief because now no one could say that I was the one being just crazy and acting out. It was all too obvious now that there was something sickening wrong within the core of the family. The paedophilia, by the way, was a public secret. To me, it was very painful to discover that even though some of us told our parents, it all went on. My other sister, who is 11 years older than I am, told my mother about it when she was 9. And my aunt and uncle knew my grandfather harassed their daughter, who is 6 years older than I am, and their solution was to put her in a jumpsuit at night and still let her stay overnight on her own. Because she'd so enjoyed it there. Mainly because my grandmother was very nice to her grandchildren. The whole atmosphere around the paedophilia was, oh, it wasn't that bad. Which also made me feel unreasonable because I was so angry about it and ashamed. Despite the children telling about this, 6 out of 7 granddaughters he could have his way with. The 7th, luckily, was kept from him by her parents. And finally, I did ask her one other question. In your life today, what would be the equivalent of driving the quirky, funny car? Because remember, at the end of the dream, she said, oh, I wished I could have driven the quirky, funny car. What situation can you imagine that would give you that sense of pleasure and fun? And she said, difficult question, maybe aerial yoga. I suddenly realised that the aerial cloth I have hanging in my studio is also green like the Citroën in the dream. A tiny bit darker than the fresh green of the car. I see it hanging every day and most of the time decline my own invitation to have a swing. I don't know why. It's the easiest thing, but I make it feel like a hassle. It's about enjoying the combination of exciting motion and swing, yet being safe. So I sat with all of this and worked back with my original understanding of the dream, which was going along those lines. But of course, I didn't pick up from the dream the paedophilia. I picked up that there was something dark and abusive going on. But I wound that information into the dream to write the interpretation, which I'm just going to read you. And this is why it's really important when you interpret your own dreams to ask the right questions, questions that can take you to deep and dark places as well as to very light and wonderful places. But the questions you ask are the ones that can really drive the depths of the interpretation. Of course, when you book a consultation, I or your dream therapist take that role. But when you learn to look at your own dreams, which you can do, for example, through the courses at the Dream Academy, there's a lot of emphasis in what kind of questions to ask and how to ask them and how to, the tools and techniques to bring on board to get out that information. So this is the written interpretation that I sent to Rachel. Interpretation. You say you've realized that what keeps stopping you is not the situations you perceive as indigestible, but your view of them. But although you know this, you can't let go of your resentment and anger. I believe your dream took you into healing territory to find a way to let go of resentment and anger through deep inner healing. When you met the former colleague emerging from the dark hallway with injured forearms, you met yourself emerging from the dark hallways of your childhood, where you had probably used your forearms to try to protect yourself from the sharp nails, in reality or in feeling, of your grandfather when he abused you. Your mission in the dream was to get him to a place of healing, the hospital. Your mission was to get yourself to a place of healing. Why was he male and a work colleague and not a young girl? Possibly because these injured, unhealed aspects of yourself affected the way you worked. You brought them into work at some level. A lot of the dream pitches comfort on one side and adventure or risk on the other. How did these conflicts influence your work? As a child, there was the conflict of being in a place that people told you was comfortable or should have been comfortable, your grandparents, but was actually extremely unsafe and risky. You learned how to value comfort and safety above adventure and risk. Several times you mention the excitement of the car suspension and also liken it to a fairground ride. A fairground ride is adventurous and questionably safe. This is a hard question to put to you, but your dream invites it. When your grandfather abused you, were you aware of the suspension in the bed, floor, car, whatever surface your body was pushed against? Was there an element of excitement and adventure before you realized what was happening? For example, were you made to feel special or adventurous as part of the initial enticement? Might we be dealing with an unconscious conflict between being attracted to adventure and then instantly repelled? The dream begins with you wearing a long dress shirt and a feeling of let's get to the point, while at the same time reminding you of your sister when she was about 16 or 17. I wonder if she was dressed this way when you were first abused or when you told her about it. You are ready to move with this subject from the dark living room in the dream into the light kitchen. The kitchen should be a nurturing space. You are ready to get this stuff out into the light and heal. At the same time, you may feel slightly foolish and exposed about this. Next in the dream is a sexual proposition that reminds you of a sexual adventure with a Porsche guy. you choose the sexual adventure or the whole adventure instead of the comfort of your husband. So you're ready to explore sexual adventure, risk, and your earliest sexual experiences. The next thing that happens is that you are in a public place that is chaotic. As a child, your grandfather's paedophilia and your abuse were a public secret, and chaos reigned. In the dream, you are, I believe, exploring this, looking for healing. You want to pee to let this stuff go, but can't. This is why the black and white toilets come up. I agree, they are most likely to have been your grandparents' toilets, and if not, were like the elementary school toilets you were familiar with at the time. Four toilets. You may not remember now, but I wonder if there were four significant abuse occasions before your abuse became a public secret, the public toilets, or whether four adults were told about it, or whether this was the stage where four of you had been abused. In the dream, the toilets had been used, so couldn't be used again. There's a feeling there of virginity being stolen. You've been used, or being told that it's too late. You've been used now, get used to it, the worst has been done. The toilets, the clothing rack symbol, also remind you of living out of a suitcase, not being homely or cozy, which is what being at your grandparents' would have been like. Is there something in the idea in the dream that once a toilet has been used, it has to be replaced, that reflects what the adults told you, the children, about abuse? Something about once your grandfather's used one of you, he needs another? Or a child might believe that? In the dream, you jumped in at the arrogant woman. You used the words jumped in at the arrogant woman and express your anger about this, which shuts her up. Did you feel the adults were arrogant in their treatment of the situation? In the dream, you successfully released some anger. You jumped in like a jumping spider, perhaps. So the jumping spider may represent your energy that's been held back, wanting to jump in and express your anger or deal with this or heal it, but instead seems to have been, as you described in the dream, nervous, jumpy, walking one step then changing direction again and again, insecure and stuck. It's also made you distrustful, hostile, insecure, and now, you discovered as you answered my question about the personality of the spider, you suddenly have the feeling you want to protect it. You're ready to give yourself the nurturing protection no one gave you at the time of your abuse. You decide to lead the spider to freedom, the meadow, and to let it go, to let it fall away. In the dream, you realize the spider was not your responsibility and let it go. Your anger, jumpiness, being stuck for direction, you let it all go. You also let go of any feeling of responsibility for the abuse. That responsibility had led to the jumping spider energy that you had tried to repress. Now it has expressed itself. You jumped in at the arrogant woman and you told the spider not to attack, and you can let it go. It is free. You are free. You cried when you wrote about the meadows and freedom in answering my questions. At this point, you choose comfort and strong understanding with your husband in the dream, in your life. And you want to begin this by being honest about the situation with a former colleague, meaning by being honest with yourself about the situation of abuse. This is why in the dream you next meet him, an aspect of your abused child, emerging from the place that felt like your grandparents' house. You're ready to be honest, having divested yourself of emotions and misplaced feelings of responsibility about the situation, and heal. The gang he had been attacked by was perhaps the gang of relatives that attacked you by covering the secret. In the dream, you are only a few blocks from healing from the hospital. Your blocks are listed in the dream as concerns about driving, not sure in direction, feeling insecure, concern about being distracted by the adventure, the risk of suspension. There was also a feeling of maybe having to pay for something, the parking fee. You give up on these blocks at the end of the dream, but note that you would have preferred to drive, to overcome these blocks. And following that, I also suggested a dream alchemy and suggested to Rachel that she actually does more of her aerial yoga. That she said that, you know, because at the end of the dream, she said, I would have enjoyed doing the quirky stuff. And I suggested doing the aerial yoga because I have a feeling that it helps her to get in touch with all those feelings of freedom and movement and momentum and risk and adventure from a good and comfortable point of view. It's encouraging those things. It's aiding the transformation of what needs to be healed. So I press send, and I, accompanied by an email suggesting to Rachel that she not respond immediately, that she takes 2, 3, or 4 days to digest and think about it before emailing me her response. So this is Rachel's response. Hi, Jane Teresa. Thank you so much. I needed to let everything sink in a little after your interpretation. One thing, though, that came to the surface from the still muddy waters right away was the suspension. You asked if the surface had suspension of some kind. I don't recall that, realizing that, judging from what my sisters and cousins tell me, there is a lot about it I don't remember. However, in my native language, suspension means both spring and feather. My grandfather's blanket was filled with feathers. As I write this, I suddenly see a link with the white bird at night that I had dreamt about the previous night. Even thinking the wounds were due to a car accident and my colleague's comment, "Look what I've done," seemed to make sense now. When I was 6, I broke my leg. I was with my sister, who was 9 at the time, and my grandfather. My sister remembers that he had said, "Wait in the middle of the street." It was a very busy road we were crossing. I got scared, pulled my hand away, and tried to reach to the other side. Apparently, my mother heard the story as follows. She ran into a van. So was it my doing? Neither my sister or I can recall the actual hit. This seems to come together with the fact that, in a way, I did feel responsible for the abuse. Your interpretation made me realise that I shy away from fun stuff out of fear it might turn into unpleasantness. From simple things like swinging aerial yoga cloth to things I want to do for a living, like my art. What I have noticed is when I'm working and things are going well, I don't allow myself room for things that take me from it too far, like that take too much time, say a minute to stretch my back is okay, having lunch is not. Because I know once I stop, the spell is broken and I will have a hard and often impossible time to get back to work. I do not clearly remember an arrogant attitude towards me when I told about my abuse. I myself am convinced that I didn't, that one of my sisters and one of my cousins were the only ones that spoke up at the time. I do, however, have no problem at all to imagine an emotional wall if at a certain moment I would have wanted to discuss or even just vaguely mention this to my mother. She would not have been able to cope with it and may, at such an event, have turned into an arrogant ice queen and or distant and deaf mode. I am certain she herself had been abused by her father. I asked her once when I was about 17 and she said, "If so, I don't remember." I find it quite easy to believe that due to certain reactions from the past, I concluded it must have been partially my own fault. On Sunday morning, I had a short dream. Of course, I had been thinking about the abuse almost non-stop since your interpretation. I dreamt I had a swollen right index finger. At one point, I went to see someone about it. It kept feeling like getting the feeling back in a numb part of your body. It tingled. But it did so for over half an hour or maybe an hour, so I worried. The person I went to took me to see Christine, a former colleague, and Christine said, "You need to pee, or else I will give you a water pill." I went to the bathroom. This was a public one. There were a few girls in there. There was a cubicle next to the wall that was smaller than the others, but still free, so I got the opportunity and privacy. I went there, but it was hard to pee, virtually impossible, as if I'd held it for too long. I have started taking your Dream Alchemy advice and did a little aerial yoga and a lot of swinging, and I will continue to do so. I can't thank you enough for your help. I doubt I would have been able, even in the long run, to see the forest for the trees. Thank you again for all your help, Rachel. This was actually done a few weeks ago, and I have since heard from Rachel, and she's progressing beautifully. She's working on healing the abuse, and she's also really enjoying her aerial yoga and finding things freeing up for her. So it will be an ongoing thing for her, but she's really thankful that she went to that dark place. And is now, of course, by virtue of you all listening to her dream and a story, has now shared it very publicly, which is going to also be part of her healing. And hopefully that will also resonate with some of you, maybe not on such a deep level, but on other traumatic levels that have happened for you, and you can see the kind of healing that can come from deeply exploring a dream. So I thought it would be good to end, not so much on a healing note, which is also a very place to end, but on a little lighter dream, although, of course, all dreams lead to wonderful healing places. And this is the dream snap. So this is actually sent in by Shona. So I'm going to read her dream, and then I'm going to talk you through just the dream snap, like the snap of a finger. So it's nothing too deep. It's an overview. It's just some pointers in the right direction. Shona's dream. My dream started with me pulling an old mat wrapped in plastic package off a shelf. I decided I didn't need this mat anymore. It was a mat I must have needed for when my oldest son was due to start high school in Woodend. But we relocated to Queensland, so we didn't need it anymore. I desperately wanted to sell the mat back to my old friend Sandra in Woodend. It was a square mat about the size of a floor routine in gymnastics when you opened it up. But Sandra didn't want it. She kept saying, "Oh, thanks, we don't need those mats anymore. And if we wanted one, we've got heaps of friends who could give us one. You can't get your money back because they hire them out these days." I was very distraught about this and kept trying to think of ways I could get my money back. I was also upset that Sandra had so many friends now who she could get another mat from if she wanted. I felt unwanted, betrayed, out of the loop, like I no longer mattered, insignificant, very sad, and was left holding the mat, not sure what to do with it. But I was clear in my mind that all my old friends had moved on and no longer needed me or my mat. So that was a dream Shona sent in, and you'll discover, if you do send in your dream for a dream snap, that on the form there's another section which says other details, which you don't have to fill in, but you can if you want. And Shona wrote in other details. I used to do gymnastics when I was a teenager, but my father forced me to give it up as he thought it was too isolating and wanted me to do a team sport. I lived for gymnastics, and it nearly killed me to have to give it up. It was the only thing I felt I was good at and my only passion in life at the time. It has also been a huge struggle for me to find friends up here like the ones I had in Woodend. But recently I have met some new people, and there is a possibility we may connect well. I am also trying to discover what I'm good at, my life purpose, what I can offer the world, how I can best help people. So if we take a quick look at the dream, we kind of stand a long way back and take an overview of it. There's obviously a lot of emotions that Shona's very in touch with her emotions in the dreams. And one of the most powerful things that you can do is notice your emotions, not when you look back on the dream, but notice the emotions that you felt in the dream and see where they relate in your life. So she feels unwanted and betrayed and insignificant, and I no longer matter. I'm left holding something I'm not sure what to do with. So those are kind of some of the emotional issues going on in her life at the moment. And she's already described that that's somewhat what it's like moving out of a supportive community to a new place and feeling that, whoa, you know, I feel unwanted. I feel insignificant. I'm not sure what to do. I'm holding something. I don't know what to do with it. You know, where do I go from here? Now, the other thing that jumped out at me was that she described at the beginning of the dream that she was pulling an old mat, but was wrapped in plastic package. So you think, okay, when something's wrapped in plastic, sometimes it's a new thing wrapped in plastic, and sometimes it's something old that we wrap up in plastic to store. but she felt it was a map that was needed for her older son when he was due to start high school. So it was like her son was about to start something new, which was high school, and so he would need this mat, whether it was a new mat or an old mat. He needed something new for this new place. So there's this kind of, is this something old? Is this something new question? Is it something that has been wrapped in plastic and saved for a new purpose for later? Or is it something that she should be letting go? So that was one thing that jumped out at me. The other thing that jumped out at me is that she said her father forced her to give up gymnastics because he thought it was too isolating and wanted her to do a team sport. So we've got isolating on one side, which was actually, she didn't feel isolated when she did gym as a teenager. She felt good. She felt it was, she was good at it and she loved it and it gave her energy at the time. But her father saw that as isolating. And opposite to isolating is her father saying you should do a team sport. So I see her time in Woodend and surrounded by all the people in her community was a bit like doing the team sport. But there's always been this dilemma with her about what do I want? Do I want the community? Do I want to be part of the team? Or when I am part of the team, have I given up on something that is kind of solo that I really enjoy? Analogous to the gymnastics. Can she have both? And when she actually leaves Woodend in life and goes to live somewhere new and doesn't have a community, doesn't have a team sport, I guess to some extent she's wondering, do I need my team or how do I get my team or can I still go solo? Can I enjoy something about being solo? Can I unfurl this gym mat and have it or do I need to let it go? Can I get rid of it? What do I do with this thing that I'm holding? This thing that I'm holding that represents something solo that I love, my gymnastics, but also something that my father said I should give up in favor of team sports, in favor of community maybe. So she's got this dilemma at the end between something that is solo and in the past has been energizing and uplifting for her, but she's been forced to give up versus making lots of connections. And of course she wants connections. She says she wants new connections in the new place, but she's also wondering, what do I do with this mat at the same time? Now, she also mentions that her son is a teenager about to start high school, and she mentions that she was a teenager when she did gymnastics and her dad made her give it up. And you'll often find this in a dream, that when your children are at a similar age to something that was an issue for you, that your dreams will start to explore what was an issue for you at the time, at the age that your children are now. So that's kind of like another clue, really. So she is wanting to go back and heal this thing or do something with this thing about her father having made her give up what he saw was isolating and what she saw was something solo and wonderful and energizing. So everyone and everything in the dream represents something about you. So Sandra is not Sandra. Sandra also represents a part of her that believes in the community and is saying there is no place for something solo and energizing like gymnastics or whatever that represents. The community has no need for that anymore. It's got no value. You can't get your money back. There's loads of them around. So there's a sense of Shona in the dream trying to evaluate, that's what it means by getting her money back in a way, evaluate this thing that she's got, this mat. What have I got in my life that is solo, that I've thoroughly enjoyed, that I have given up in the past because I've believed it's been isolating or I've been told it's been isolating. I can't get rid of it now. What are my options? And as far as I can see, her options are she could let it go. She could let the mat go and find something new in her life. She could repurpose the mat. Say, this is something from my past that I used to enjoy. How can I repurpose it? I can't remember what the third thing was at the moment. That's the problem with being spontaneous here. However, I see that there are three ways that she can use this mat. She can let it go. She can repurpose it. Or she can energize it, re-energize it along the lines that she used to have it with the gymnastics. So as a dream alchemy, what I would do, although we haven't gone deeply into this dream, Shona, if you're listening, as a dream alchemy, I would consider either going back and doing some gymnastics or going and doing something similar to gymnastics, just to get back in touch with that feeling of this is something that I innately enjoy and it's not isolating and it gives me a lot of pleasure, and get back in touch with that feeling that you left behind as a teenager, not so that you go on and become a gymnast. This is not the purpose of your life from here forward, but just to get back in touch with that energy. So let the dream alchemy of doing that get you back in touch with that energy, even if it's just prancing around the house a bit, and actually lay out a mat so you've got the feeling of I'm doing this on a mat. So that would be the dream alchemy. And then I would say, you know, you say here that you're wondering about trying to discover what you're good at, what your life purpose is, what you can offer the world, how you can best help people. And I'd say it's about integrating, bringing up what is your solo skill? What is it about being on your own that you do really well? What is it that you do better by yourself than in a team? What is it that feels like a natural skill to you, like gymnastics, but not gymnastics? And then when you develop this, how can you then balance that by taking it out into the community? So you've got the best of both worlds. So you're not betraying your gift. You're using your gift. It's not a gift that no longer matters. It's not a gift that's insignificant. All these feelings from the dream, you put yourself down as being no longer mattering, being insignificant. And these were actually what you've done to your gift, your gift of doing things solo, is you've made them insignificant. You've betrayed yourself. You've seen that they no longer matter. You've devalued them. You can't sell them in any way. So I would look at developing those skills, getting back in touch with them, not gymnastics, something you do on your own very well, and then taking them out into the community, which is where they are needed. So I could go a lot more deeply, but that's basically probably a little bit more than I would normally do with a dream snap, but it gives you an idea. So if you would like to send in a dream for a dream snap, or if you would like to volunteer to be a guest on the dream show where we phone you or Skype you and record our conversation, then go to my website at janetheresa.com, go to the menu, go to podcasts, and you'll see on the drop-down box there, I think it says contribute to the dream show or something like that, but it'll be obvious. Click there, find the form, send it to me. It comes direct to me. So if you're writing something confidential, don't worry. No one else sees it. It's just me that sees it. I have no idea what the time is, but I feel that this has been a very long episode. So I'm going to take my leave now. Thank you for listening all the way to the end of this show. And I look forward to bringing you the next show, episode 191. Episode 192 will be due out on the 23rd of June 2017, if you're listening to these in real time. Of course, you can listen to all episodes of The Dream Show at janetheresa.com, and you can always listen to the last 10 episodes on iTunes. If you're not on our newsletter list, please do go to janetheresa.com or to The Dream Academy and opt in, subscribe to the newsletter, because you receive lots of really good stuff through that, and you also get alerted to the latest podcasts and blogs and so on. So also go to janetheresa.com and look at what other services and also free resources are offered there. And if you haven't been to The Dream Academy and explored the online courses, you're missing out. Go and have a look. Have a wonderful month, and I'll speak to you next time. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson.